First you try to kill me, then you lie to me. I'm just trying to keep Serena safe.
Ciri is safe with me until the day she takes over my throne.
Listen to me.
I did listen once. Let a hedgehog into my court. It got me Pavetta dead. I won't lose Ciri too. So you and Destiny can both fuck right off. Because if Nilfgaard comes, will Destiny carry a banner into battle? No. We have an army, a navy, and me.
Welcome to Kinfolk Lore, a podcast where we explore fictional worlds that bring people together. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul, and we're cousins who love to discuss world building in sci-fi and fantasy. We hope that over time, through our shared love of our favorite stories, we all become family on this podcast journey.
For our second season, we are discussing The Witcher, the fantasy show by Netflix. Today, we will talk about major plot points in episode 7, titled Before a Fall, and give our reflections on the show and some takeaways that will help you navigate this world.
Kin Folklore also has adult content, much like the show The Witcher has adult content. So if you don't enjoy commentary about kings who only look after their cocks and their coffers, this might not be the one for you. But if you enjoy tales of, you know, on-site drilling while sipping some tasty piss in a cup, sip your bar and control your chaos. This is episode 7.
The episode begins with Cirilla arriving in a village where she attempts to get some food. She inquires of the locals about how far she is from the coast and is told that with a good horse, she's about a week away.
She wants to see the sights. She's excited. She's trying to get out of Dodge. You know, she left Dara behind. She's trying to go think on the beach.
She needs to worry about other things before she goes on a vacation.
Yeah, I was a little bit troubled that the first thing on her mind was hitting, like, you know, the beach, getting a vacation, clear thoughts. It's concerning.
So a woman approaches her, and she tells her that she must be careful since the village is unsafe for women on their own.
And Ciri's like, you don't know my life. Like, whatever. I don't need to talk to you. Like, this is just like every other place. It's dangerous. Get over it. And she walks away.
Yeah, she's really coming gangsta into this village.
Yeah.
Like, I've been through some stuff now. And I'm like, girl, you haven't been watching the same show I have. Because compared to the other characters, you haven't been through much.
She had a little bass in her voice, too. Like, last episode, she was like, where do we go? Where do we go? This version was like, you don't know my life. Whatever. I'm out of here. She's emo teen now.
Yeah, what killed me about this part where Ciri is just kind of like, I got this. Like, I understand the world is I'm like, okay, so let's really go through what you have been through. So you escaped a battle. Okay. Mm-hmm. Traumatizing.
Tough.
Yeah. Big, like, that's a issue, right? Some mm-hmm. trauma. You ended up in a refugee camp where people were slaughtered. Okay. Also yep. very traumatizing. Mm-hmm. You went to a magical forest.
Not so traumatizing.
No, I mean, no, you were welcomed with open arms.
Yeah.
Okay. Then you chose to leave, taking your protector with you.
Yeah.
And got captured.
Yeah.
That's upsetting. Okay. Upsetting. She's been through some stuff, but like compared to, I don't know, fighting Astriga.
Listen.
Having to battle multiple reavers that just keep multiplying every time you kill one, it regenerates.
Or getting shot with arrows trying to tell you not to go into the forest. Like, the guy took, like, 2 arrows easily, like, trying to get you not to go into the forest. Poor Dara. And then he got hit over the head, and then he frees you. And, I mean, she went through, can we call that a breakup? Their friendship? They, like, broke up?
Yeah, they definitely broke up.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. Cirilla's a child, but I think that it just goes to show how naive she truly is. Like, this woman is trying to warn her, this world is really dangerous. And she's sort of like, everywhere's dangerous, whatever, and walks away. But the world is a lot more dangerous than even Cirilla, who's been through some stuff, knows.
100%.
And so
it's getting more dangerous by the second, it seems like, in this.
Yes, situation. Absolutely. So Geralt is making his way to Syntra, and Nilfgaardian troops are on the move. He meets with Malsak, who informs him that the Child of Surprise is actually a princess named Cirilla. Geralt is worried about the child because he's aware that Nilfgaard is on its way to Syntra, and Malsak assures him that all is well because Calanthe has fortified the castle and takes all measures that she can to protect her family.
Before she sends assassins to try to kill people, seems like pretty wild, wild stuff. Like, what are she, like, she's like, yeah, Malsak, go meet with Geralt. It's cool. Everything's fine. All's forgiven. Oh, let me send these 5 assassins to go try to kill this guy. You know, it's super crazy.
I mean, it's on brand for Calanthe. Like, she's always going to, like, try to bring the most muscle to any fight.
Also, let's discuss the elephant. I agree. And let's discuss the elephant in the room. I need some, I mean, this Child of Surprise, it sounds like a bad recipe in the Witch's Cookbook from Hansel and Gretel. Like, this is just a bad situation. All right, this term is just, like, bad. Like, who thought of this? Like, Child of Surprise. I'm sorry. This is just, does not feel good. It doesn't come off the tongue easily.
No, it certainly doesn't. So, speaking of fortifying the castle, Calanthe is in the courtyard trying to prepare for battle. Aista is returning shortly with ships from Skellige. I think we're saying that right. Mm-hmm. The queen is worried, but she believes that they can defeat Nilfgaard. She has the best line ever. I think every time Calanthe speaks, I'm like, this, she's speaking the truth. But bars. This line was hilarious. The army whose stink I can smell on a strong breeze is the one I worry about. What a line.
It's great. It's super great. Oh my gosh. Like, and it just rolls out. She doesn't hesitate. She's so quick witted. It's
and
great.
She's not giving a speech. It's said in passing.
Yeah.
Like, Nilfgaard is taking L's and they don't even know yet. It's so good.
It's so good.
So Geralt is ambushed by Calanthe's knights, but Malsak is able to portal them into the courtyard where they meet Calanthe, who is not happy to see Geralt. Mugging him.
Yes.
She's just looking at him like, this guy again?
I mean, and the last memory she has, right, is having to deal with, at least from what we know in the story, is having to deal with that situation at the engagement banquet and everything that went down there. So she's like, yo, not now. This is like this person that shows up when you're already stressed out. You got people outside your castle. Things are like rough. And you're like, this motherfucker here, you really came now? Oh, man, it's pretty funny.
Yeah, she's not interested. So she's very concerned about giving over her granddaughter, which, let's be honest,
yeah,
that's fair.
Fair.
That's definitely fair. But, you know, Geralt is basically like, if you think Ciri is in danger, you need to give her over to me because I can protect her. And he makes a pretty good case, I think. He will do anything to protect her, and he will just be protecting her. He won't also be trying to save an entire kingdom. He's not going to be trying to save other people. His main focus will be Cirilla.
And my question in this case, though, was why? Like, because he left... what has changed? Because he left... really clear that he didn't give a shit about destiny. He didn't care what destiny had. So now he's come back and it feels as if he's like now not really a buyer of destiny, but doesn't want to have the chance to mess it up. Like if it is in fact true, he doesn't want to be the reason why kingdoms fall and things go wrong. So do you think that what happened with the Golden Dragon really shaped his thought process around this thing around destiny?
Yeah, so that's how I read it. It's always a little bit tricky with this story because they've been so playful with the timelines. But I read it that he took what the dragon said to him. He took what Borscht said to him as he had to do something to deal with his destiny. And, you know, I think also we don't know where he was in between the dragon hunt and seeing the Nilfgaardian troops on the move. But I think he's finally realizing he's run from this thing for 12 years, and it's not, it's tearing him apart personally, but also at this point, he just can't avoid it.
Yeah. We don't know where he's been.
Right. And we don't know, it's not super clear from the show how far, how long it's been since the dragon hunt. I don't think it's been much time.
It doesn't look like much time, except for his wardrobe became impeccable. What kind of coin did he get? Like, that coin, it must have been a big bag. He got a bag because his outfit is dope. I was like, look at Geralt. The hair is looking fresh. The outfit's looking fresh. You can't smell the color of his horse anymore. It's good.
Well, he knew he was going to go meet the Child of Surprise.
I'm going to leave a good impression.
Yeah, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would. If I'm going to adopt a kid, I want to not look like a freaking homeless guy.
Sure. So after this back and forth that Geralt and Calanthe have, he makes a good case, and she seems to initially accept this and tells him that she will let Cirilla know herself. Speaking of Ciri, we're back in her village, and she's been recognized by two Sintrans who are watching a puppet show that is basically anti-Sintra propaganda. I would love to know who wrote this show. I rewound it multiple times so that I could understand to see, like, I wanted to see what exactly was happening in this show. And it's just, they're basically just mocking the royal family of Sintra, from what I can tell.
Yeah.
No, and I was like, this is not nice. These people are all, for as far as y'all know, these people are all dead.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really wild. It's just super funny. And is like, it's funny in the sense that she walks right by it, like totally unbothered, not even realizing it was a puppet show about her family, and just like, whatever. And it's good exposition by the showrunners too. It's pretty good. Good stuff.
So Cirilla is cold, so she wants to get a pair of gloves. And in order to buy the pair of gloves, she gives over her mother's ring, which was a really sad moment. But also, mm-hmm. I was like, girl, get something more than a pair of gloves. Mm-hmm. First of all, these gloves look secondhand. But anyway. So the same woman from earlier in the episode approaches her again and says, a lot is happening on the continent, and we're better if we stick together. She offers Cirilla her home, mm-hmm. which I don't know whether or not to trust this woman, right? But I was just like, what an extraordinary thing. You just see a random little girl and you offer her a safe harbor.
Yeah.
Cirilla agrees, and the woman goes off to buy something, and Cirilla takes that opportunity to steal the woman's horse.
Jack moves. She's jacking the horse. She's out of here, like New Jersey Drive, 1990 style. Like, I'm taking this horse. I'm out of here. Like, it's crazy.
This is not what we meant when we said that she needed to grow up.
No.
This is... Can you imagine Dara doing this?
I can't. This is definitely, like, to go to one of our other favorite stories, this is definitely a Hound move. This is definitely, like, something the Hound would have done. Like, you know, like, when he took the gold from that family and he makes that whole speech about like, you know, how many Starks do they have to kill before you get it? That's how the world works. That's what I thought. And she hops on the horse and just bounces. I was like, this is some gangster shit. She walked in, puffed up, angry, told him, you don't know my life, and then stole the horse. Like, this shit is gangster. She is not playing around.
I'll take it a step further, mentioning another one of our favorite stories. This reminded me a little bit of Lyra.
Yeah.
From his Dark Materials. Because Lyra would take the horse, but she would have told the woman, I'm stealing your horse, and then been gone. Yeah. little girls coming of age in gangsta style.
I don't know. I think Lyra would have convinced that lady that it was okay for her to steal her horse. Like, she would have been like, I'm going to steal your horse. You're going to be okay with it. In fact, you may come along with me. And then she would have taken her along on whatever journey she was going and never made it back to her house. Lyra, they don't call her Silver Tongue for nothing.
That's fair. Lyra is like... basically a mini attorney. she would have convinced the woman that she gave her permission to have the horse.
I mean, Lee was on a whole other mission in his life, and then all of a sudden he's like, yeah, let's go free the kids, we'll go do all eight. Like, his whole life mission became different after he met Lyra, just because she was out here spinning those bars. She's like, listen, this is what we're gonna do. You're gonna do this, you're gonna do this, and you're gonna come along with us. I can hear John Fa, like, you're gonna have to listen to me, Lyra.
Anyway. So Calanthe, back in Geralt's timeline, Calanthe tries to pull a fast one on Geralt by giving him another little girl who we know is not Ciri. Right? Because we've been with her since episode one. But Geralt doesn't know that. Nope. He doesn't seem like he feels quite right about the interaction with this fake Princess Ciri, but he accepts it and he leaves. As he's leaving, there's a door at the end of the corridor that opens, and he follows it back out to the courtyard where he sees the imposter princess, the one that he just met, saying goodbye to her friends, Corrin and Anton. We'll come back to those two later. And then she curtsies to the real Princess Cirilla, who is back where she was in episode one, playing CeeLo. It's the same scene.
Dice game. Got that dice game going. 7-Eleven.
It's the same scene from the first episode, which I thought was really, really cool that they just showed it from Geralt's point of view.
Yeah. Do you think that Mousesack opened that door?
When I was watching it. That's a good question. Oh, I wonder.
Because when he was leaving, they locked eyes, and you could tell that Mousesack Mousesack has been a very strong supporter of the law of surprise in general. So I can't imagine that he would be okay with them kind of like misrepresenting who Ciri is to Geralt. But I think that there's like obviously I watched the subtitles, and it's indescript whispering that you hear and everything. Kind of made me feel like, well, maybe that's Mousesack opening that door. They don't say it clearly, but that was my thought process anyway.
Oh, that's a really good point. I did not think about that. I just assumed that like this was some kind of magical destiny at play. But yes, I think that makes sense. It could be Mousesack. That would be cool. A cool reveal. So I guess it's Ciri maybe felt Geralt's presence because right then she turns around. But when she turns around, he's gone. So Geralt is not about that. He goes back and talks to Calanthe, who is just like, you can fuck right off.
Oh, God, it's so good.
Can we just say that she's the greatest of all time? Yeah. I love her.
Yeah, it's so good. And she's even like, after, you know, listening to you guys last time about this destiny bullshit, like, made me lose my daughter and I let a hedgehog into my court. Like, you know? Oh, it's good.
And so Ice shows up right at that moment. He's returned from sea, and she does not even greet her husband. She's just like, get this guy out of here. So he escorts Geralt out of the castle, and, you know, Geralt says to him, you used to believe in the law of surprise, you used to honor it, what happened? And he's like, but this is my granddaughter, and I'm going to follow the queen's lead on this. So he makes Geralt promise that he won't return, and Geralt says, I cannot make that promise, because if I think Cirilla is in danger, I'm going to come and try to help her. And because he won't make the promise, Ice imprisons him.
Yeah.
So our Witcher has been captured.
Toss a coin.
Yeah, well. A coin's not going to help him.
Toss a key. Give him a key. Yeah, he needs a key. Yeah.
So now we join Yennefer. And she's to a site that is being excavated in Nazir.
Yeah, Nazir.
I think that's how it's said. So she's there looking for the one and only Isrid. Hey, boo.
Oh my God, this guy.
He's still looking good.
Is he though?
Still
is he?
Looking
he looks
good.
Pretty dusty right now.
He's a working man. He is a researcher who likes to use his hands. I'm all about him. He is looking good still. Listen, it's been like, what, 40, 50 years? He looks great.
Yeah. Well, he got a beard now. He got the beard going. It's kind of crazy. He's like, you know, he's
apparently he swung by Brooklyn on his way to Nazir.
I was trying to say, not say, he looks like the continent's version of an off-brand hipster right now in this scene, okay? That's what is happening in this scene. I was like, what happened? The fro got a little more rugged. The beard grew out. He's, you know, it's crazy. Anyway,
I was excited to see his return.
I know you are. No Idrit slander on my part, except for what I just said. I will stand down.
We all have problematic faves. He's so far, he's only evil adjacent. Listen, still looking good. Okay. So he tells her that he's doing research into the time before the conjunction of the spheres, and that Nilfgaard allows him to do that. You know, Yen is kind of like, why are you doing this with Nilfgaard? And he's like, well, they let me do my research.
And they don't care just about their coin and their coffers and their cocks, and they give us ale that we need, and Yen dunks on the ale. She's like, this shit is terrible.
The ale's trash. Yeah.
Trash.
It's not craft ale. It's garbage. It's garbage. So it's not really clear what Yen wants, but she's trying to rekindle that relationship. She tells him that she misses him. She wants to go back to the time when they made plans in the cave, and Idrit is not having it. He's like, listen, I tried for years and years, and you shut me down. No response. You left all of my text messages unread. I'm not doing this with you.
She shut him down. She was messing around. The best part of this exchange to me is when he's like, look at you. You can have anyone.
And she's like, and I did. And she says it so casually. I was hurt for him. Like, my feelings were hurt for him. I was like, oh, wow, that's harsh. Like,
yeah, it was great. I love that part. I was like, she was like, listen, bro, like, I wasn't out here waiting for you. I'm coming back to throw you a bone. Are you going to take this thing or not? And he's like, nah, I'm good. He's out.
So. Yeah, and can you really blame him? I mean, she has her fall from grace. She's basically been outside of the Brotherhood's laws for years, and now she shows up because Geralt and her didn't work out. He doesn't know that, but I'm sure he can smell the desperation on her. And he's not interested.
Yeah.
So Yen has not even a second to contemplate that she just got rejected when Vilgefort of Roggeveen, some guy we've never met before, I was like, who is this guy, approaches her and basically says, I know that you use fake papers to get in here. We're going to be arrested or conscripted into Nilfgaard's service. So we need to go to Aretuza. And he name drops Taseya and basically says, she says, you're the best student she ever had. And we need to go back to Aretuza. And Yennefer agrees.
Yeah. Yeah. She's like, she's pretty intrigued. She's like, oh, so like, you know, because she has a lot of love for Taseya, even though it's a weird relationship with them, as we see play out later on. But yeah, that was the right note to strike with her at the table. And this guy swooped in super fast. Like,
he was pretty smooth. She was like sitting there drinking the terrible ale, feeling sorry for herself, and he was like, we don't got time for that.
No, it was good. It was good. So I mean, I really love this segment. I thought that there was some really interesting parts to it, and I think, you know, at first it was hard for me to wrap my mind with the different timelines. I feel like, you know, the timeline of the Nilfgaardians and with Yen and Geralt is pretty where Geralt is and where Yen is in this story right now are pretty close, but obviously Ciri is a little bit further down the road. So I was trying to, you know, keep track of that. But other than that, man, I really enjoyed the way that they're setting this up and bringing this back full circle to what happened in the very first episode that we saw.
Yeah, I love the cutbacks to the first episode as well. I thought that was really cool because it's acknowledging to the audience, yeah, okay, you've already seen some of this stuff, and reminding us that the timelines are now kind of just converging. Mm-hmm. I would have loved to see some more hints in the beginning of the show about where Yen's timeline was, essentially. But we do get there eventually. It doesn't seem super clear at the section that I just talked about. But We do understand that the timelines are converging. Ciri is now only maybe a few months ahead of the other two.
Yeah.
Could even be a few weeks. We don't really know how long Ciri has been out in the world. So it could be a matter of days, a few weeks, a couple months. It's not really clear. We don't know how long she was in Brokolan, which is probably the place where she's been the longest.
Yeah, that is the place she spent the most time, and it's and truthfully, the place where she probably should have stayed a little bit longer.
I think she would have been safe longer if she had stayed there, but you know, I think that obviously something like she needs to be out in the world to move the story along, but we don't know how long she's there. She could have been there for a month. She could have been there for a few days. It's not really clear.
Long enough to get swindled by the Doppler. Long enough. That's what we know for sure. So anyway, back into where we are, we finally see Yennefer's return to boring Hogwarts, where Yennefer and learns that Nilfgaard is about to attack Syntra, and some of the mages want to intervene, and they don't want that to happen. So she goes in search of Tasaya, finding out that, you know, she was not actually the one who asked for her to come back, that this guy, Vigafor, was just like, hey, I told you she was her best student, but I didn't say that she really wanted you. And she's a little bit irritated that already the lies have begun. Mm-hmm. So, she finds a group of young girls after you see a scene that is pretty telling about why she hasn't wanted to return. She's going down the hall and you see, you know, you hear voices from the past, things that Tasaya said to her, struggles that she had, just playing out audibly in her mind as she's walking down this hallway and remembering what it was like to be a student here at Arethusa. And so she opens the door and barges in on the girls. What's going on here? Like, what are you guys doing? And, you know, not really giving the return alumni speech that you want at your commencement. Like, it wasn't really great.
Yeah, no. I definitely would not bring her to a alumni panel. No.
No. She didn't have glowy things to say. She told them that she was a mage and what court she was a mage at. And she speaks about how boring it was to be a mage. And then one of the girls asked her why she came back. And at that point, she decides to kind of change the subject and talk to them about the herbs that they were looking at, because they gave the excuse that they were doing botany. And she says, you want to learn about these herbs that you're talking about? And let's put them together. Let's mix them together. And the girls are kind of apprehensive because they've been told that they shouldn't mix these herbs. And she lets them know that they tell you that so that they can keep you in the dark. First lesson, learn to think for yourself. Like, don't, it'll help you out in the world. And so essentially, they start mixing these two herbs together and they start tripping balls. Like, they're like,
just totally high.
Yeah, really high. And this is not like, you know, like they just smoke some weed. This is like, you know, psychedelic high. Like, they're out there. So they're, you know, you're hearing like a lot of blurry speech. And in the midst of that, she finds out that one of the girls doesn't even have any magical powers. One of their families was a royal family who decided to pay for her entrance into Arethusa. And you got to ask yourself, who the hell is running this place? Is this Lucius Malfoy, like, as the dean? Like, what is going on around here?
Hogwarts would never. Never. Over the dead bodies of all the headmasters, this would never happen. McGonagall, Dumbledore, they would not let it happen. Now, Dolores Umbridge, maybe. But maybe. This would not happen. It's so wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, it's wild. And Yen's mortified by this, and she wants to take them to show them what she thinks Arethusa is really about. And so she takes them to the site of where her classmates were turned into eels. She even, like, you know, kind of illuminates the water and has a little conversation with one of her classmates. She mentions her name and, like, says, "Is that you?" And in that moment, as she's explaining that they take away your ability, this is what happens. They take away your ability to procreate, all of these things that she thinks that they need to know about what the Brotherhood does. At that moment, she's interrupted by Tasaya, who walks in and says, "Back to your room, girls." And she says to her, "You've already ruined one life. Let's stop there. Like, leave it at the one life that you ruined inferring that she ruined her life. So their reunion starts off with, you know, Yen following her to try to, you know, pick a fight. She wants to tell her what she thinks. And in that moment, it's kind of cut short because a lot of the mages are showing up there and Taseya says it's beginning. So the mages are there to discuss the conflict between Nilfgaard and Syntra. And Yen is reunited at that moment with Triss. And the mages are basically in conflict about what they should do. Some, of course, led by fucking Stregobor, are saying that they should sit out. The worst. He's the worst. He's terrible. But he's saying they should sit out. You know, Syntra's wanted to not have a mage. They didn't want anybody from the Brotherhood. They've gone it alone this long. Let's leave them to just do it on their own. And of course, there's on the other side where Taseya is saying, no, we need to help them because Nilfgaard is a real threat to everything that we stand for and our way of life. And some would say that they need to just let it fall. At that point, Frangilla shows up. Good old Franny. She shows up to tell the Brotherhood that they should not get involved and that she's at that moment by Triss, who steps up and says, why are you even here? You have, you know, persecuted mages. You've practiced dark magic. You've, you know, actually even like killed like people that are in our order. So she's basically saying that she doesn't think that she should even be involved in it. And of course, at that point, Franny comes in and she says, you know what? Let me lay out Nilfgaard's whole policy platform and what we intend for the future. You know, this is our vision for the future here.
Gives a good stump speech.
Yeah, it's wild. She's talking about funding, basic needs, research, tearing down the wall, et cetera. And, you know, they all call a vote in that moment. And she's laid out her platform. This is what it is. And, of course, Stregobor and Frangilla have been successful in beating out Taseya and the other mages. And Franny at this point also calls the Emperor of Nilfgaard by his name. And we are now confirmed that the Black Knight is actually not the Emperor or the King of Nilfgaard and is just one of his captains that is going on this mission to overthrow Syntra and for some reason capture Ciri. There's a lot in there.
Yeah, I mean, let's just take a second because this scene was really loaded. And there's so much conflict within the Brotherhood. Like, we'll talk a little bit more at the end of the episode about the Brotherhood and the chapter, but this was a lot. So Stregobor is on the let's do nothing, who cares mm-hmm. about Syntra side. Taseya and a bunch of the other mages are on the we have to do something. It's our responsibility to do something. Mm-hmm. Yen is on the burn it all down. Drakkaris, mm-hmm. I don't really care. None of this is good. It sucks. All of them, I think, have some decent points, right? Mm-hmm. Like, as much as I dislike Stregobor, I can see his point of view that Syntra never wanted any help from the Brotherhood. So why should the Brotherhood now get involved in a conflict between the kingdoms? That's a fair point. I don't agree with it, but it's a fair point. I also think, you know, he obviously has his own agenda here because Stregobor always does.
Sure.
But it's a fair point. Taseya, on the other hand, is saying that Nilfgaard is out of control. Mm-hmm. They're seeking to take over the entire continent and their way of life is going to leave the Brotherhood in a place where they don't have any power. That's mm-hmm. also a good point of view. Yen, who is angry at everything and tired of the lies and the politics and being forced into making choices that she doesn't want to make, says all of this is wrong. All of it needs to be reformed, tear it down, start afresh. None of it is good.
Yeah.
This good is points. These are all fair, right? Coming from these three points of views. So the fact that they lose the vote is disappointing. But I also wondered why everyone got to vote on this, right? Why wasn't it just the chapter? Why is it all of these mages get a vote?
Well, I think I perceive that all of them were part of the chapter except for Frangilla and Yennefer, who Yennefer was no longer a part because she, you know, like relinquished her post. And they even say she doesn't get a vote, you know, kind of thing. And dunk on her savagely. Like, this is the first time I've ever seen Yen get. Stregobor was not like, not. He played to the crowd to get them to turn on her. And I thought that Taseya actually showed her a great vow of support, and while also kind of like getting across a subliminal message while talking about the conflict, but also talking about their conflict, which I thought was artfully done by her to say, hey, this is where we are. Yes, Syntra has been this. Yes, Syntra has stood. And Syntra was almost, in her speech, a stand-in for Yennefer. Like, yes, you've done these things, and I still have a place for you in my heart and what I think we should do. And I thought that was pretty passionate. But I think that they allow it because all of them have, I think, some connection to this institution. And I don't, to be completely honest, if I'm being honest, I don't know the rules of how, even if you leave the chapter, they haven't presented that. Do you still get to be part of the chapter? If you've gone on to someplace else, do you still get to be part of these things? Those rules have not been laid out clearly, at least in the show.
Right. And it's really clear that Mousak is out from Stregobor's comments that Mousak is also outside of the Brotherhood. Mm-hmm. He doesn't interact with them. He works in Syntra under a totally different group of rules than mm-hmm. mages typically do. So I thought this politicking was interesting, and I liked it a lot because it finally is putting Nilfgaard's actions in perspective for the entire continent. We've mm-hmm. been hearing all this time, Nilfgaard's on the move, Nilfgaard's on the move. Some of these mages are really terrified of what happens if Syntra falls. You know, mm-hmm. will their kingdoms be next? And Nilfgaard thinks that they're doing the right thing, you know, that like all dictatorships, they're sort of like, okay, but we're giving people food and we're funding research. Come with us because we are better. But they're not giving people a choice. They're just moving in with a military.
And she also has and Frangilla also has a kind of like similar viewpoint, but slanted more towards the benefit of Nilfgaard, to what Yen is saying about Aretuza. Like, she is basically saying, this is what, dark magic, like, you know, dark or light magic is what they tell you here to limit what your knowledge in the world. And she's basically now totally in the camp of what the Nilfgaardians have been teaching. And she's practicing what she learned at Aretuza, but she's more in their line of thinking. And it's really clear that the Emperor has a very clear mission. And I don't know what relationship, or probably don't want to say too much relationship it has to the White Flame. But it seems to be something that they're very driven by this idea of like their religious zeal and their religious conquest. So it's almost like it seems like a faith-based mission is what it is, I guess mm-hmm. it would be, to mm-hmm. like kind of conquer in the hopes that through doing that, they can save the world and the continent from what they see coming. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, so. This was a really great back and forth. I liked it a lot. I kind of wish that there was a way this could have happened earlier, but there isn't really. Like this, mm-hmm. the way this story has been plotted out, this had to come at this point. And obviously this is the second to last episode, so we have to like make things extremely urgent leading up to the finale. So yeah. I like this a lot.
Yep. So then in this point, after they lose the vote, Tasaya says, yeah, it's good that they voted, but we're gonna go a little splinter mission and we're gonna do this anyway. So we're gonna go and we're gonna go and try to help Syntra, regardless of what they said, a small group of us. And she asked Yen to join the group in what I felt was a very touching scene, because it really was, you know, Yen being very, very angry still and coming at Tasaya, even after what was said inside the meeting, and her saying, listen, if you won't do it for Syntra, if you won't do it for the Brotherhood, then do it for me, please. And you know, even Yen melted a little bit, and she had to come with something. She's like, well, have you ever used that word before? And, you know, they kind of like have a moment. And to me, it was very touching to see the dynamics of their relationship. Yes, there is a strain. Yes, they have, you know, some enmities, things that they haven't quite worked out, but there still is a love and a bond there between the two of them that has never left. At that point, you know, Nilfgaard is winning. They are really running through Syntra worse than what Syntra probably could have expected with all of the preparation that they've done. Geralt has escaped his cell, and Calanthe, she asked Melsec to go and bring Geralt to Ciri, but unfortunately, when Melsec gets there, Geralt's gone. So this is a new scene, a new take and look at the scene that we saw in the bedroom where Calanthe was, you know, dying and wounded, and she, you know, is ready to send Ciri off. So when we saw Malsak leave and then come back in that scene, that's where he was going. So we see it from a new angle. Uh-huh. And when he comes back in, that scene plays out again, where she says it's time for Ciri to go. Ciri doesn't want to go, and she, you know, screams, and the glass shakes. And eventually, you know, she leaves after being told that, you know, she needed to go and find Geralt of Rivia. At that point, we see Calanthe do what she did in the first episode, pull a Tommen Baratheon and quick pirouette out to the ground, and unfortunately jumps to her death, and she lands right next to Geralt. So in this moment, we're going to go ahead, since we knew it was going to come a second time now, and we are going to pour one out.
For Queen Calanthe.
Yeah, Queen Calanthe, the lioness of Syntra.
Just with the savage remarks, brave, just yeah. Love this woman. Sad yeah. to see her go.
Me too. Okay, so now that Calanthe is no longer with us, basically Geralt knows, oh my gosh, I gotta go find Ciri. Because if Calanthe's dead, who's protecting Ciri? Because, you know, let's be honest here. Calanthe is one of the most feared warriors in all of the continent. People know that she is not to be played with. So now if it's come to this point where Nilfgaard has ran through Syntra, where Calanthe is now jumping out of a window, he knows that Ciri is in danger. So back in, we basically see back in Ciri's current timeline that she has been taken, you know, she's taken the stolen horse to an empty field where, you know, she's talking to the horse. She's building a relationship. Kind of reminds us of another character in this story.
I wonder. Although she does say only something about like crazy people talk to their horses. Doesn't she make some kind of remark?
Yeah, she does.
I was like, okay, well, you're doing it. And Geralt does it all the time.
Oh, man. They don't even know how much they have in common. Oh, that sword of destiny. It rings true no matter if you know each other or not. So she is, you know, talking to the horse when she's attacked by a group of men, including people who she was out there playing dice with, Anton, her former friend. This guy is trash.
And he can't even just be like, all right, just give us your stuff, Cirilla. Like, we have to do this, right? Like, come with us. We have to give you over to Nilfgaard. We're desperate. He's just like, you are garbage because you were the princess. We never liked you anyway. And this is why this is happening.
Yeah, and we used to let you win. Like, we let you win at the game, and we had to because you were the princess. You really thought you were good. He starts, like, he's super salty, like, for no reason. I wasn't a fan. And, you know, they start to rob her. They really try to go ahead and rob her and then say that they're going to turn her over to Nilfgaard because of the prize that is on her head, to be able to reward that they would get. And at that point, Cirilla connects with her magical powers and is possessed, is the best word to use it and use at this point. And she ends the episode by speaking a very well-known prophecy, which will bring us into the things you need to know.
Okay, so let's just talk about what she actually said. So she, to quote what she said on the show, this prophecy is actually longer than what is on the show, but I'm only going to read the parts that are on the show. Verily, I say unto you, The error of the sword and the axe are nigh. The error of the wolf's blizzard. The time of the white chill and the white light is nigh. The time of madness and the time of contempt. This is a very well-known elven prophecy from an elf known as Ifflin. It foretells the end of the world. And elves and mages believe that only a descendant of a sorceress known as Lara Doran can prevent this from happening to civilization and save the world. So we're going to talk more about this prophecy in our wrap-up episode, because there's, if we go any further, there's a lot of spoilers. But just to give you a little bit of background on Ifflin, she was a healer, astrologist, and oracle, and she had the gift of divination. She, much better than Professor Trelawney. Like, she actually could see things. Yeah. Trelawney only really had that one prophecy. And, you know, she's also predicted a number of things correctly, including the war that we're engaged in on the show right now. She foresaw that as well. So
Nostradamus out here in these streets.
Yeah, no, she got this right. She's gotten a number of other things right in the world. And she's basically saying that Cirilla, who is a descendant of this Lara Doran, we don't know how yet, is going to save the world or can save the world. So, yeah, that's the prophecy that she says at the end of the show. I thought that the way that they presented it was really, really cool.
Because it doesn't give away where things are going, but it gives you a little bit of a taste of, oh, wait, Ciri has this kind of magic at her disposal. Like, what is this about? And I thought it was really cool the way they did it. It reminded me of some of the cinema scenes back in the day that I used to see in video games, and I thought it was really cool the way they presented it. So,
yeah, I liked it a lot too, because there was a moment where we actually kind of see her connect with magic. Mm-hmm. Cirilla's mostly screamed and then something happens, and so it seemed mostly like her magic was connected to her own emotions. This really solidified for me that her magic goes beyond that, that she can connect with I don't know if I call it a higher power, but she can connect with magic in a way that I don't know that we've seen quite yet. But what's kind of upsetting is she clearly cannot control it. Had this been Yennefer, right, if it was a mage, she would have been able to channel that magic, and she would have had a moment, you know, controlling chaos is different from what Cirilla was doing. Yeah.
And she, and I think one of the things, some of the things that just hitting on this with the prophecy, some of the things that I, you know, without going too deep, I looked into as well, is that they believed that Ifflin believed that this prophecy was going to happen when blood was spilled, was going to begin when the blood of the elves was like, you know, being spilled on the earth or spilled on the continent, like at record numbers. So the fact that we've in this show seen so much of like the idea of like people just cutting off the ears of elves and elves being hunted people, and this was their home before the conjunction of the spheres, and us seeing all of that, it's really interesting to me that the prophecy is lining up based on what she said for us as an audience, that if you have that knowledge, that yeah, it's lining up in that way, that this is coming to fruition. So
yeah, I think that this stuff about the prophecy is really interesting. You and I have talked a little bit offline about it. So I'm excited to talk more about it going forward. So we will definitely do that in our wrap-up episode, which will include some spoilers. Yeah. So we don't want to do it now because we know that some of you don't like spoilers. The final wrap-up episode for our second season will have, you know, some spoilers from the Witcher's books, from the show, from the games. We don't know necessarily where the show is going to go, but we'll do a little bit of analysis on some of the things that we couldn't talk about in the main pod.
Yep, definitely. So let's talk about the next thing you need to know, which is the Brotherhood of the Mages. Formed after a non-aggression pact in the 8th century, and they're in charge of the use of magic in the continent and oversee the administration of magical academies, the one in Aretusa, a.k.a. Boring Hogwarts, which includes Barnard, not Evil Drumsting.
Yeah, this place is maybe not evil. I mean, we don't really know. We don't really know that many male mages, but, you know, we're going to go with it's not Evil Durmstrang.
Durmstrang, yeah, not Evil Durmstrang. And the chapter is part of the hierarchy within the Brotherhood and is responsible for the placement of mages in kingdoms and the magic and magical research. As we've seen in the show, the council is also concerned with the political issues of the continent, and not all its members agree at all times about which way they should go, and some members prefer not to get involved at all. Some believe in maintaining the status quo, and others are in favor of Nilfgaard's aggression. And that is the things you need to know from this episode. I'm really looking forward into going deeper, but let's talk about what we liked, what we questioned, and what we want to see more of.
I really liked the political stuff with the Brotherhood in the chapter. It's clear that, like, within the Brotherhood, the Rectoress, which is Tessaia and Stregobor, are always kind of at odds with each other. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't surprising to see them at odds with each other again. But I thought it was really interesting to see that this conclave played out. And I had my own questions about whether or not I thought that the Brotherhood should intervene. Mm-hmm. You know, how can the Brotherhood intervene in a war and still have credibility with the entire continent? I'm not sure that it can. But on the flip side, because we've seen what happened in Syntra already, you know, we don't want that. We know that bad things happened when Nilfgaard reached Syntra. And so I was conflicted, but I liked that. It made me think about the conflict in this world and the human conflict, which has been kind of like a steady current throughout the entire season, but has not always been front and center the way it was here. That, yes, mm-hmm. there are monsters in this world, but the main conflict that we're worried about are the conflicts between humans.
Yeah. I like that too. And I really, really liked that this was the episode where they decided we're going to switch tone. Like this, the tone of this episode is completely different from the middle meat of this season to me, where we got to find out more about the characters, but it makes sense that we said goodbye to Yaskier to go into this portion of the story. In the last episode, because mm-hmm. in this episode, like, you immediately see all these characters return to where we began with them in episode 1 and 2. Like, we see them start, like, you know, we see kind of like, I almost, in one sense, because everyone else had returned, I almost got confused in the last scene that Cirilla had just left on the back of the horse. In the first episode where she left and then she was in the field and ended up screaming in the earth, I almost got confused that somehow that she was like in that moment, not in the moment that she was in just leaving the town, with the, you know, different timelines. But I like that so much of the themes of what they're going through and what their journey will be were revisited to round this story out. Mm-hmm. And also we actually revisited the actual places of what we saw and saw from different angles. So that really helped me to understand why everything was important in this episode.
Totally. I think that I see episode 1 in a totally different light now that I've seen episode 7. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I've been very critical of the way that the story has been played out in terms of the timelines and how confusing it is. And I agree that some of it still doesn't quite work, but I liked this part of it. I thought it was mm-hmm. great to finally see Geralt was there, right? Mm-hmm. All this time we've been wondering how Geralt's story connects to Cirilla's. And we're seeing now that Geralt was literally there when Cirilla was captured the first time. He just mm-hmm. couldn't get to her. So I like that a lot too.
Yeah. And then, you know, I guess what I want to see more of is, you know, man, I want to see more of the the reason why this conflict is happening, you know, all the backstory stuff, you know, the things that will happen over time in the show. What I have found through, you know, outside of the shows, watching, listening to the book on audiobook and then reading some and then reading a bunch of articles and playing the game, because, you know, that's how I like to learn about worlds on top of when I'm watching a show. It's just such a vast world, and there's a lot of similarities to some of the other things I love about other fantasy worlds, but it also has its unique points that make it really fascinating. And I really want to see more of the aspects of the world that, you know, they very much narrowed it to the stories around these three people and the places they're connected to, which I know that'll be some of it. But the expansion of this world to the side stories, to the people who are very big players in this world, the different groups, the types, I want to see more of that. I want to see more of that come into the storytelling with the dwarves and more about the elves. When can we see the elf side of this story, where you see the king, you know, not just seeing him capture Geralt, but actually see where those people are, what they're living like, what they're going through, and what their plans are. I think it's going to come into probably focus in our, you know, next season, but I really do want to see more of that.
Yeah, I think I have the same thing. Now that we are invested in these characters, I need to know more about what got us here in the first place. And there's some things that have been discussed, but are not, you know, like the elves have been kind of like off screen, right? I mean, aside from Dara, they haven't really had much representation on screen, and the individual characters are not representative of the entire conflict between the elder races and the human race. And so I would love to just know more about the history of the world. And I think we've consistently said that every episode. So hopefully in season two, we'll get more of that, because that's what's the only thing that's really missing from me. I thought this was a great episode overall.
Me too. Cool. Well, I think that is where we end for today. And thank you so much. We have actually, we are building the chart. We have actually solicited and finished our sorting of all these characters. And we have some other resources that we will be announcing in our next pod, or in the wrap-up pod. So we hope that that's all helpful to you, and we hope that you keep communicating with us on kinfolklore@gmail.com, kinfolklorepod on Twitter, and hit us up on Facebook on our kinfolklore pod page on Facebook as well, and join. Go ahead and join and follow the page.
And leave us reviews. We need reviews on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening to your podcasts.
Yeah, definitely.
Five stars only.
Only five stars. Come on. Don't make us sign the Nilfgaardians after you, okay? All right, guys. Have a good one. We'll see you next week.
Bye.